Hey guys, I'm Stevie Nelson.
And I'm Dave Horwitz.
And this is I Burn Everything, a food and relationship podcast during the time of social distancing.
Welcome to another quarantined installment, Stevie.
Here we go, Dave. Another one over, you know, from our separate homes, keeping it real safe.
From our separate makeshift enclave recording studios with no soundproofing, and there's a helicopter outside of my window. Wish I knew why, but honestly, maybe it's better I don't know why.
It's for the best. You could always look it up on the neighborhood app and just be sorely disappointed in humanity.
Yeah, I have yet to download Nextdoor since I had it last time because it's a little, yeah, I don't really want to know about how paranoid my neighbors are about maybe some non-white people appearing at the edge of their driveway for 4 seconds. It's not what you want to read if you want to keep the will to live intact.
No, it's not. It's just not okay. But what is okay?
You know what is okay? Oh my God, we've been doing this for too long.
Too much. Our guest today is very okay. We have podcaster, producer, and actor, Katie Stoll.
And returning guest.
Yes, thank God.
And returning guest, Katie Stoll.
Okay, here we go.
Let's talk now.
No, not yet, actually.
Sorry.
It's okay. Wait,
let's keep this whole part in. Katie, you can't talk yet.
We have to play our theme song.
I'm sorry.
And if we fuck this up, no one will listen to the podcast. This is what our podcast depends on, Katie.
Yeah.
Sorry.
We have to lock in the listeners after the theme song to count it as a listen. So if people crap out on us now, It's all for naught.
Okay, I have a good idea. So
I'm horrified.
Let's cue the theme song right now. Okay, great. Did you guys feel good about that theme song going?
Yeah, I felt great about it.
I can talk now.
Hi, Katie.
Hi, I felt so good about that theme song going.
Oh, it feels so good when the theme song plays, you know?
It's just so comforting and reassuring and normal. It's normal.
It's our new normal.
It's
the new normal.
Oh, Dave, the helicopter that was circling above your house has now flown above mine.
Oh, I love being neighbors with you.
Katie?
I can't hear a helicopter. Oh.
Yeah,
maybe it'll come over here. I just moved to a different neighborhood. Otherwise, I'm sure it would have been above my house,
You're
too.
A couple neighborhoods away, right? You're thinking you're exactly two away.
I'm 2.5 neighborhoods away.
How do you like it so far?
Oh, it's lovely. It's lovely. It's beautiful. I moved to Mount Washington.
Ooh, okay.
Only a few of the people listening probably know where that is.
Tell them what it's like. Describe it.
It's so beautiful. Mount Washington is just a little pocket. It's like a near East LA, you know, near Silver Lake, but it's less hip. There's more just little families. It's very colorful. I can go on a hike without going on a hiking trail because the street, there's so many hills and it's just so beautiful. You'll be walking around and you'll feel like you're in Hawaii. It's so lush.
Oh, nice.
And I'm very grateful for that. My boyfriend and I moved in 2 weeks before lockdown.
Wow.
I mean, we'd started moving in before then, but like out of our places March 1st, you know? And so that's been a real trial by fire.
What has it been like? Tell us what it's been like.
I mean, wonderful. I'm very grateful that we made that decision when we did. But it's stressful because you were moving in and you're already adjusting to living with somebody, even without a global pandemic. And that's a stressor in and of itself. You know, learning about how to ask for your space when you need it and what are the boundaries that you have to keep your sense of self separate from the relationship. And then all of a sudden we're not allowed to see anybody but each other.
Yeah.
and you know, negotiating. So I'm a podcaster, so I record from home, and he is an actor, but he's a voice actor. He's on animated shows and does a lot of auditions for that. So it's tricky to figure out like when people record and where, because we have limited amount of space. Right now I'm in the garage.
Do you share equipment or like how's that work?
No, but we were just upstairs discussing it because he wants to soundproof one of our rooms to do recording in, and that's fine, but it's already become kind of a catch-all room. Mm-hmm. It's like our closet and the office and the pathway to the outside, and there's no door on that room. And like, it's just tricky. It's tricky.
How do you soundproof a room without a door?
But we were thinking about investing in some stuff that we share. I have my own stuff that's not as nice as his stuff.
Okay.
You know, and I guess I could make that upgrade, but I it doesn't have to be perfect for podcasting. It's different when you're doing an animated show or, you know, he did pickups. He did ADR for something from our office upstairs, and I can't imagine how that sounds.
I bet, but it sounds pretty good. I'm very heartened by what's going on right now. I mean, you know, most everything is a very, very disheartening, but the one part that constantly makes me feel pretty good is realizing just how much things can and do go on. And podcasting is a big one. The reason why there's a ton of current animated shows in production, including one that employs me, is that it's just very easy to do all this stuff when you're not in the same room.
Right. And he's feeling very grateful for the fact that, you know, it's hard to crack into voiceover work. So we're very grateful that he still has that as an option. It's but yes, to what you were saying, how that is heartening. It is heartening. And we're recording this on Earth Day. And one of the things that first struck me when we started doing all this is, yes, just how many people can work from home and how quickly we see the effects on the planet. You know, climate, you know, smog is improving. The Venice canals are clear for the first time in decades. And, you know, all these things that seemed impossible, all of a sudden there is some significant collective action happening. And we see that there are positive side effects to this nightmare is, I guess, my point.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, living in Los Angeles, just looking up at the sky on any given day, as much as things are feeling maybe hopeless or helpless in parts, it is so clear. I'm almost scared for when things go back to normal.
Yeah,
and the roads are congested and the emissions are off the charts. And I mean, this is the state that invented having a smog check. And and now I just look out and I'm like, oh, if I take a little hike or walk to a high point, you can see further than you could have seen time I've lived here.
Yes. Yeah. And it's weird too, because it's like on a really good day. I remember like years ago on like a really good day in LA, if you were hiking, you could see the ocean. And now if you just go up into like a higher neighborhood, you can see the ocean. It's so crystal clear. I do love that aspect of this where it feels like nature is sort of healing itself.
Yeah,
it's beautiful.
I miss going to the gym. and I would love to be able to buy a carton of milk without standing in line for an hour or ordering it 5 days in ahead.
Yeah, or having to overthink. I feel like the overthinking of getting groceries sort of makes me want to crawl into a hole and just die. Like,
yeah, it's incredibly stressful.
Too much thought goes into it. I'm so I'm used to being so carefree about it that the idea of having to like write a list and then go get those things, knowing that you'll probably have to substitute 90% of them, is like, ugh.
It's like I knew how spoiled we were on some level, an intellectual level of like, oh man, it sucks for other places that don't have the resources we have. Or even if you go to Europe, their markets are so small and it doesn't necessarily have the selection that you are used to having here. And it just really, pulls things into focus a little bit when you see just how spoiled we are and how used to this lifestyle in a way that seems very hard to shake off.
It's a privileged lifestyle.
We still have the things that we need. We But we just have to put a little bit more thought into it, and it's hard. It's a hard adjustment.
Katie, that reminds me. So I live with two other people, and it's really before it was sort of a situation, I will admit, of convenience. You know, the price was right, and the space I have mm-hmm. to myself is extremely valuable for the neighborhood I live in, blah blah blah, etc. And you know, it's not that we all kept to ourselves. We all did get along, but this is making the whole situation fairly more communal in that we discuss grocery runs together. Mm-hmm. We make lists. There's been a lot of like group cooking and group meals and food that lasts for, you know, we make it one night and then it lasts for three or four nights. Is this like current situation affecting how you and your boyfriend eat together?
Yeah, it's been tricky. So I know that you guys talk to a lot of people about food and relationships, and I'm sure that you've talked to a lot of people that have, you know, disordered eating histories of that kind of a struggle. And I definitely would include myself in that group. It's been so much better as I've gotten older, and I've found a lot of tools for myself to keep myself calm and centered and not spiraling and going to bad places than I maybe would have in my 20s. But this kind of feels like a trigger. It's mm-hmm. it's difficult to not have access to it's easy to feel out of control with the news being a spiral, and you don't have the outlets that you're used to, like going to bar method or just going out and having a nice fresh salad or talking to people and like relieving some of that bent up stress, just any of the stuff that you have that helps manage your anxieties day to day are gone. And so now we're in this situation where you're buying stuff in advance and you've got stuff in like it's hard to not snack, and then you're not sure what you want for a meal. So that's my struggle that I come into it. Coming into this, I have that. My boyfriend couldn't be more opposite. He's a real rich eater. He loves to cook. He loves to cook big, fancy meals. And that's his comfort, right? That's how he deals with stress. And he wants to give that to me. He wants to provide that. That's something that he can do for me. Mm-hmm. Except that doesn't help me right now, you know? And yeah. I mean, sometimes it might, sometimes occasionally, but on a day-to-day basis, that kind of tends to make me feel a little bit more out of control. And I'm not saying that that's healthy. I'm saying that's what's coming up for me right now. And so there's a little bit of a negotiation, but we've gotten better about communicating, like, what is it that makes me feel good that he can cook for me so that we're both getting something from that experience, you know? We've started to cook big batches of like lentils and roasted vegetables that I can have for meals and stuff.
Oh,
and
that's a very like, Katie Stoll meal. Right? Lentils. I remember one time coming over to your house and you were just cooking lentils, and I was like,
yeah, okay, lentils and rice. Yep. It's a perfect protein.
It is.
It's kind of versatile. You know, and then like maybe once or twice a week, have it experimenting with some sort of a bigger meal. This morning, he made me gluten-free pancakes, and we sat outside on our little patio. And had that and listened to music.
That sounds
and that was
so
lovely.
Nice.
But I think, yeah, it's just, but it certainly, as we started this off and just moving in together and adjusting to all of this, and there's all of these other stressors, and food shouldn't be a thing that's a point of conflict or bringing up bad emotions for us right now. It should be a source of comfort.
Yeah, I don't know, Katie. I don't know if it should or shouldn't be a point of conflict. I think honestly, food in general can be a huge point of conflict in any relationship, because the truth is, like, in a typical relationship, when people are going to work and coming home, you kind of only have to discuss like one meal. You have to be like, oh, let's talk about dinner or whatever it is, right?
Right.
But suddenly you're discussing every meal. What do you want for lunch? What do you want for breakfast? And it's sort of like you're two on top of each other. So there is this issue of like, of course it becomes something, because it's kind of annoying to even talk about it at the end of the day.
Yeah, totally.
The thing that I was going to say is that I guess what your quote of food shouldn't be a stressor in a relationship. It's, I think that, you know, you guys only had a few weeks of living together without the pressure of the situation we're currently in. And honestly, it's not that food, quote unquote, shouldn't be a stressor, but I think that a big part of a lot of relationships, or a big aspect of most relationships, is eating, because it's a big part of dates. It's a big part of your day. Like, I just remember my first big LA romantic relationship that was 2 years. I just got so used to, well, I have a job, and on the way home from my job, mm-hmm. I'm going to call my girlfriend and we're going to say, what do you feel like doing? Should we, you know, have you eaten yet? Should we eat together? Should we make food? Should we go to this restaurant? And I think it's just a really, I mean, even my current relationship, that's kind of a big part of it, because we spent a lot of, you know, our weeknights together before this whole thing went down. So I think that, like, I think that the adjustment period, I think you're dealing with two adjustment periods. It's the adjustment period of living with someone, and it's the adjustment period of living with someone and having to deal with all of these restrictions where it's, I mean, this is huge news, guys, but I did my big, you know, $300 for 3-person grocery run earlier this week. And I found, for the first time in 6 weeks, a 5-pound bag of rice.
Wow. Congratulations. That's a big get.
It's a huge get right now.
So if you know where I live, listeners, please respect me in this time and do not break into my home.
Looking for grains of rice.
Yeah.
You're completely right. There is an adjustment anyway from a typical dating situation to cohabitating. Yeah. You know, in my, where most of my meals were by myself. And then in the evening, you know, it did feel a bit more spontaneous. It did feel more fun and like a treat. Like, oh, we're going to cook something together. I'm going to watch him cook. He's a good cook. you know, and that's an adjustment for him. And I knew moving in, and I'd said this, but you never know until it's actually happening. Like, that, you know, there's going to be some things that are different when we live mm-hmm. together. And you don't anticipate that being, which is fine. You're set up for that. But you just don't anticipate 2 weeks afterwards you being locked down indefinitely for years. And
no. Who could? So who could anticipate that?
We are spending too much money, is, I guess, coming it back around to the big shops and the meal planning. Like, I will go maybe once every 2 weeks. You know, I try to not do it that often, but stock up on the things that bring me comfort, you know, the things that I know are staples, my protein bars that I live by, and, you know, some gluten-free stuff, some frozen things that I know. Some
What's your bar
food,
of
you
choice?
Know, stuff that I know.
Yeah. What is the bar?
I love a Think Thin bar. Yeah.
Think Thin?
They're called the Think Thin bars. They're a good protein. They're so good. I also, I go in and out of love with the RX bars. Currently, I'm into them.
Mm.
Very good.
Textural, those RX bars.
People, they are. Sometimes I used to love them, and then I went off of them for like 2 years. Now I'm back on them.
Okay, you're back on the you're back on it.
But, you know, and we figured it out. But it's definitely been there's been a lot of adjusting. But I this has made it all sound fairly negative. I'm very, very grateful that we moved in together when we did. We've been very loving and supportive. We've been very patient with each other. We've done a good job of, if one of us is in a bad mood, someone naturally kind of buoys it and tries to, it's like we kind of counterbalance each other a little bit. And it's been very helpful, very nurturing. We've been communicating pretty well. And it's so hard. I think that a lot of people can probably relate to this if they're quarantined with a partner. It's so hard to not confuse your anxiety and your frustration at large with annoyances at a person.
Oh my gosh, so what a good point.
You know,
yeah.
It's so hard to say I'm feeling bad right now. And you are the thing in front of me, and something you did is annoying right now for whatever reason. It's so hard to step back and say, 9 times out of 10, that wouldn't be annoying. What am I actually feeling right now? Oh, I'm feeling scared about mm-hmm. the future. I'm feeling overwhelmed by just the toxic news every minute of every day. I'm sad for my friends. I'm sad. I'm worried for my parents. That is completely different from this kind person over here that's just doing their best and is also has a full plate of anxiety to deal with. And as we got in, as this started, we had a really frank conversation about that. And I think we've done a really good job. It's not to say that there haven't been moments and days that are harder than others, but even through the bad times, we have that awareness. And I'm really, really proud of that.
That's great.
And the other thing, we had this other conversation the other night, and it had been like a hard day for whatever reason. And the way he was looking at this period of time, he was saying like, I see us as a ship, and we're this really strong ship, and we're sailing through this very, this storm. There's all these external things, but we're doing a good job. But it's just like a really, we're in the middle of a bad storm. And I was like, oh, that's interesting, because the way I'm looking at this period is I'm really surprised at how well we're doing. Like, I'm not even paying attention to the storm. I'm seeing.
Interesting.
Yeah. I'm like, because I thought it would be even harder than this, knowing me and knowing my triggers, knowing that I have food issues, knowing that my anxiety I deal with by going out and being with people, being out in the world, even just walking around a mall makes me feel calm sometimes. And none of those things are at my disposal. So I, going into this, I really thought I would be doing even worse than I'm doing, you know, and it's just two different perspectives of this, and neither one is wrong. But yeah, I'm grateful. I'm very grateful that we made, also we moved in together after having not dated for very long.
Yeah. How long?
It? Yeah.
We started dating in September.
So it's like,
yeah.
6 months?
We moved in 6 months-ish. But, you know, we'd been friends before. We knew each other. It wasn't like a 6 month relationship. It really feels like a year and a half long relationship.
How long did you guys know each other before you started dating?
We've known each other for years, but we became much better friends over the summer. So, you know, it'd been this kind of tight group of friends that we'd been hanging out with, and we were like gravitating towards each other, but neither of us wanted to mess up the friendship. So, you know, we just became really good friends, talking about deep things and, you know, hanging out a lot. And after a while, it just became very clear that we were also very attracted to each other. You know, as much as you're like, oh, this guy's cute, but I'm not going to mess it up because this is too valuable. But then sooner or later, you know, you got to see if you can mess it up a little bit.
Oh, sure. Oh, have to mess it up a little bit. I think I saw you over the summer, and we had both kind of recently gotten into relationships, but it's funny because I hadn't seen you in person in quite some time. But the way that we are on the internet, I'm like, oh, look what's going on.
Yeah.
two people I know who like each other and like me are in a relationship. That's nice. That makes me feel good.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is, I asked this, I think maybe only once before on the show, but I asked one of our guests who had been in a live-in relationship what the best part of the transition into living with that person was, and that person said splitting rent.
Wait,
which honestly, Katie, I'm about to ask you the same question, and no pressure. If that is the best part, you can just say that. That's fine. I will say I am looking or hoping for a different answer.
Yeah, we're hoping.
Ooh, I can't even pick this.
Yeah,
one.
We're hoping for a non-financial answer.
It's not. We're not saving that much money.
Oh, good.
Okay, good.
We
good,
moved good, in. Good. When we knew pretty quickly that we were going to live together eventually. And out of the gate, it was like, well, it definitely needs to be two bedrooms, ideally two baths. You know, we both work and can afford rent.
Have two baths, Katie?
It does not have two baths. It does not. But that's okay, because the bathroom has a bathtub with jets. Okay.
And it's
really big. Like, we can both take a bath at the same time.
Excuse me.
Which we do almost every day.
Wait, roll that back.
So maybe,
hold on. Hold on a second. You guys take baths together in your jet packed bathtub daily?
Almost every day.
Yeah. I'm sorry. What?
I've got a question, actually, because he was surprised. I've never taken a bath with a partner before. Mm. And I was like, this is unique. This is new. And he's like, really? You should ask people, because I feel like a lot more women are taking baths with their partners.
Wait. Why does he, why does he think that?
He thinks because he doesn't think it's abnormal. I think he just thinks it's like a very normal thing.
Oh, I was just wondering where his statistics were coming from. Like, I've read that a lot of women are taking baths with their partners.
We've read a study that 9 out of 10 women are currently taking baths with their partners. Okay, Dave,
we call it co-bathing.
Oh my god.
Okay, that's some cute stuff now.
Dave, is this normal for you? Can you speak to this?
I can. C-A-N, speak to this. And you know, I live modestly, so I'm not going to, and I'm not, Katie, I'm not saying that you live lavishly. I think that whatever you have found is a surprise.
Yes. Absolute shock. Uh-huh.
So that and that scans. I don't think that you would be like, this is number one on my priority list. I've co-bathed with a partner before, but only in the context of house sitting for far more wealthy friends.
Yeah.
Okay. So that feels like that feels like the main signifiers. I mean, if you're spending time elsewhere.
Have you ever bathed a partner? Like, before we had this bathtub, we've tried. We had like at his place, the bathtub was a little small. We would get in there together, but it would be tight. But like I'd have like a hard day, and I'd be in the bath, and he would draw me a bath with candles, and then like he would just. He has a cup in the bathtub just for pouring water over my head. Like, washing my back.
This is so sweet.
It's very, very tender. I'm telling you,
painfully.
It's such
sweet.
A nice thing to do.
I know this man, and
oh no, I'm sharing
well,
too
no,
much.
Well, no. Well, but here's the thing: I quite like him. I like him a lot. I've known him for years. I have liked him the entire time. Even so, this is shocking in the best possible way.
It is like the cutest insight. This is maybe the cutest thing I've ever heard on the podcast. To be honest, like the idea that you guys co-bathe together and that he has like his own ritual attached to it with like a cup to make it easier to get
the special cup.
The Epsom salts.
Wow.
Yeah. Yo. Yeah. There's a dedicated bathroom cup for this now.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's one thing that I love about living with him. What are some other things? I wake up early and I have my time by myself because he sleeps in a little bit later, but he's never grouchy when I come in and wake him up. And we have our mornings are really beautiful and special to me, much more so than just when we were staying at each other's houses, because, you know, then one of us isn't in our space as well. Like, you feel like you can really flourish when our stuff is together and this is both of our home. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so our mornings feel really special. He's very thoughtful. He picks flowers across. There's a big field across the street, and he'll go and pick flowers and put them around the house.
That's cute.
All of that's nice. I love sharing the responsibility. My dog is much calmer. I love sharing the responsibility of him. They've really settled into a pattern together, and my dog seems to be flourishing. He's less anxious. It's rent I could care less about. I love that when we moved in, he offered to put all of the utilities in his name, and then like I'll give him money for utilities, but I that was the kind of caretaking that I like, because it stresses me out, bills on time. You know what I mean? I take care of the internet stuff and streaming services and things like that. I like the dividing up of the responsibilities of the household, you know. There's so many benefits to it. I couldn't begin to say one.
No, I mean, you've said more than one. I think that, and honestly, that's sort of, I think that's something we don't deal with that much on this show is just how different, because I think, you know, sometimes we book exactly who we want, and sometimes we book someone that, you know, you bump into and go, oh, this person would be great, or somebody suggests someone. I always had it in my head of, oh, it'd be so great if we had sort of a section where we had single people in a section where we had people like dating right. on the scene, people in new relationships, people who had just moved in, married people, older people, people who've been married for decades. And, yeah. you know, obviously with a show like this in a town like this, it's, you know, you interview your friends and the people you really like, and then, right. and then friends of friends. But I think that not enough is made of the distinction between the intimacy you can achieve in a, sort of what you were describing, you know, when we stay over each other's houses in the morning, in a cohabitating, this is our shared space. Because, you know, you mentioned like it's not much, but having the utilities all in his name, and he Venmo requests you or whatever, and you have like internet and TV, and, you know, you have your mornings that are important to you by yourself, and then you share your mornings together, and you know, the bathtub stuff is too cute, it's too cute for words. But then also the stuff with bringing a dog in that was originally yours, that then like the yeah. two of them have bonded. It's just a very, I mean.
Well, and that was stressful at first because he's never had dogs. He's not categorically not a dog person, although that's changing. You know,
interesting.
He didn't realize. I mean,
what kind of person was he, like, if you're not a dog person?
He's just a human. No, they just never had dogs, and he likes humans. He loves snakes. Like they had I mean, he doesn't want a pet snake, but he'll look at any bird and he'll be like, oh, that's a red tailed dove. No, that's not a bird, but you know, like he's very in tune with nature and stuff, but they never had dogs. Oh. He's allergic to cats, but he loves cats. And a dog is a very needy thing that's in your life.
True.
It's like a child, especially my dog. He's very much a permanent puppy.
Oh, Benny.
I love him.
He's an adorable little
thing. He's very cute.
He's not always easy, but it was an adjustment, but I'm so grateful. And now he loves Benny. It's, you know, but it was just, I'm very grateful that he had an open mind about it. And, you know, our relationship was so important that he spent time with Benny, and now he loves Benny very much. And he even floated the idea. He's like, well, maybe Benny needs another dog. And I was like, really?
Oh,
oh my God, really? We're open to
Ooh,
that.
I love that. That's how you know a relationship is really taking off. You add a second dog.
You had a second dog. We're not there yet, but
that's okay.
Maybe someday. Yeah. Because there's a lot of coyotes here.
Oh no! Protect Benny at all costs from the coyotes, please.
At all costs. We bought him a coyote vest.
Oh, with the spikes.
With the spikes, it's got spikes in these little things up top that make him look like a porcupine.
Cute.
So the coyote sees him. They're like, they think twice about going after that small porcupine.
Oh my
God. That's extremely funny. Imagining a giant coyote.
It's so funny.
Imagining a gigantic coyote seeing your tiny, tiny dog wearing a weird vest, a vest with neon spikes sticking out, and going, guys, I don't know about this. I think this is a ferocious porcupine.
I can't tell. Well, it's mostly just a bayou time.
Oh, sure.
So like, you know, yeah. like, because they move fast, but. 2 days after we moved in, we awoke to this terrible sound outside.
Oh, no.
And there's like a really small, we have a big backyard, but there's a small space in between the side of the our bedroom and the fence, our neighbor's fence, like maybe 3 feet wide. And I peered outside that window, and there were six coyotes fighting in between the house and the
fence.
With
each other?
Snarling. Yeah, like a pack of coyotes. And we came up. Come running outside. Go on, get.
Go on, get.
And then one by one are running up the path in our backyard, because our backyard is on a hill into a like a mountain. It's impossible to fence it off the back of it.
Oh wow.
So this coyote pack lives up the hill somewhere.
Oh, no.
And there was blood on the side of the house.
Well, it makes sense because you did describe your neighborhood as being very like lush. It makes sense there would be like packs of coyotes. That being said, not ideal for small dogs.
Yeah, we keep Benny safe.
Okay,
at
good.
All, at
Thank
all costs.
God. Keep my boy safe.
Yeah.
Hey guys, Stevie here. just wanted to say, hey, why don't you contact us? You can email us at iburneverythingpod@gmail.com, or you can even call our hotline, leave a message, 213-458-5236. It's 213-458-5236, and we may even talk about your message or email on a future episode. So get to it.
But I mean, that's all of that is to say that it's I don't know. It does feel like a big step, but I'm sure you did not come into it lightly. I think this is the we've talked to I think one person so far who has, you know, moved in under quarantine or under duress or under the clock, yeah. As far as, okay, we have like 2 days to make this decision. It's great that you were already making that. Yeah. That decision and taking that step, because I think without any doubt, having to kind of scramble and go, okay, who's giving up their apartment for this next however many months, would have been horrible.
Yeah. I don't think that we would have. I think that we would have just continued to split time between our two places, I think. But that's hard too, you know. There's just so much stress about, again, the shopping and the sharing of stuff.
Well,
and
someone's always displaced. Like,
someone's always
displaced.
And I think
that part, that's the part of like dating that I think is the most hard, is that like depending on whose house you spend more time at, either someone has a constant guest and their house has to be clean, right, or someone else is constantly displaced as a visitor, exactly, in someone else's home. And I think both are kind of hard positions to be in.
Yeah, because then you start to feel like, when I was mostly staying at his place, because he's a big guy, tall, and he has a big bed versus I had a full.
What does big bed mean?
And so it wasn't very, he's got a king, you know.
Ooh. Yes,
same. We have a king now.
Okay, you came up.
I moved up in the world. I mean, I was in love with my bed, though. It was sad to say goodbye to it. I just bought my first big girl bed.
Oh, wow.
But it's in storage. but it was hard for him to come to my place. But then at his place, there's not a spot for my things, so it's always slightly messy, you know. And like, then if I'm every day going home and getting new underwear and new clothes and back and forth, and Benny felt disjointed. And so it's just, we knew how much better it would be when we lived together.
Yeah.
We knew how much easier that tension, not that it was tension, but like, and also, it's also different now that we're in quarantine. But when you're not and you're living your life, maybe I'm working and I've still got stuff to do till later in the evening, and then you don't end up seeing each other because it's like, oh, I'm tired, I don't want to pack stuff up and go over there, versus, oh, I'm here and we've had a meal and now I can keep working and you can do your thing, but we're still here to say goodnight to each other. So it's like, even if we're not planning a big date, there's still these special moments. And so that was of course very appealing to us.
Yeah,
as
course.
Part of the main reason why we wanted to do this, to make our time together even better, and to start building our life, because, you know, from where we stand, this is it, you know.
That's so cool to think about. Honestly, I think some of it, to me, some of it comes with age, but also some of it just comes down to feeling. Yes. And to go, I mean, sure, things are really serious right now, no matter what what you're dealing with relationship wise. I mean, I think any situation you're involved in feels very big and important, but to be with someone and to think, to be able to think ahead and to not just think, oh, this is someone I'm dating and it's kind of cool and it's working out. I mean, I knew people who lived together in their early 20s, and I would go over to their apartment and I couldn't believe it. I was like, I just, every time friends of mine moved in together, I was like, wow, it's like they're my parents, but they're 23. You know what I mean?
Right.
But now it just feels so much more natural and so much more like what's supposed to be happening. And I think that difference is really important.
Yeah, because I've lived with a couple boyfriends over the years, and, you know, I look back and we ended up living together for all the wrong reasons, and I never wanted that to happen again.
What are the wrong reasons?
I've been single for a long time. When my first boyfriend that I lived with, I was in my early 20s. He was much older. And that was out of fear. That was out of loneliness because I didn't have a network here. And he was one of the few people I knew.
Yeah.
And I was young. I was so young. And then the next boyfriend that I lived with, we were together for a few years and stuff. But he really moved in because, I mean, convenience, you know, it was just he just ended up being at my house all the time. And then I cleared out a closet. And then it was like, well, you don't really even have very much furniture. So just
come on in.
Stay.
Yeah.
Here. It wasn't like a thoughtful thing where we'd carved out our own separate lives and then said, you know what, I'm ready to do this together, because I think that you have to be separate people.
Yeah.
You have to be in a place where you're not going to collapse under the weight of the relationship and lose yourself in it. You're going to be, I've got my stuff. You add value to, you add to my life and you support this and you help me grow. I can see this being the thing that this is going to last, and let's start to do this work so that we continue to, like, you know, grow our lives together. Because
it sounds like you're talking about the difference of, like, just combining lives because it would probably be easier ish in the long run versus, like, consciously creating a home together. It seems very different.
And we both loved our homes. That was hard. And I think anybody that's considering moving in should know that that doesn't mean that you're not going to mourn what you're leaving behind in some capacity. Yeah. No matter how excited you are about this new adventure, my place was so special to me. It had been my home for 5 years and it had helped me grow and become who I am now. And I love the community around it. I love the neighborhood. I had made it a perfect reflection of my aesthetic and that's a journey to let go of that and to create something new with someone else. And he had a great spot that he'd lived for a long time, right by in Silver Lake, right by the reservoir.
Mm.
And that was really valuable to him, that space. And it was his bachelor pad that had a lot of good memories. But we were both like, without question, no, I'm ready for this next adventure. So it felt so healthy and good, and I'm grateful. Again, I just have to keep coming back to gratitude that we'd made that decision before the rest of this, because I wouldn't want our decision to move in together to be about anything other than wanting to spend our lives with each other. You know what I mean? As opposed to, I'm panicking. Let's bunker down.
I mean, look, there are lower stakes versions of that I'm panicking feeling. And honestly, you know, I'm in a very, very healthy, strong relationship right now. And I'm excited for what I believe is coming is that, you know, I think eventually we will be living together. And that's something that we've both envisioned. We haven't discussed it quite, you know, as much, but it's also, this is, we're a new relationship too. But my only other live-in relationship was extremely short-lived. And I remember having all of these parameters, but they were the, you know, six, 7 years ago version of me parameters that got bent and were way more malleable than they would be now, which is, you know, I don't want you to move in here. I would just want us to get our own space. Like, my ex was the same way. I was like, I don't want to move in here. And then I'd say 10 months into us dating, my roommate was like, I'm moving out. And it was a 2-bedroom, 2-bath with parking and central air and central heat. And it was cheap. And next thing I knew, my ex was moving all the stuff in, and we got all of this great, expensive hand-me-down furniture from some very wealthy friends of ours. And before I knew it, I was looking around going, oh, almost none of this stuff is mine. And then when the relationship fell apart, I still have mild regrets about this. I moved out for, you know, reasons I will probably tell in a different episode, but I was like, I'm getting out of here. And then I left and was like, wait a minute, I have absolutely no stuff. I'm back at zero.
Oh, it completely upends your life when that happens. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, and it's such a weird thing when you're moving in. Like, even I was this debate, sell my bed or keep it, you know?
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Sell this bed or keep it. Mm-hmm.
I sold mine and I didn't have a bed. So you're good. It's
then you didn't have a bed.
Yeah.
But like, am I holding on to this? Is this somehow giving me an out, you know? I'm holding on to it now because I couldn't sell it.
Oh, nobody wanted to buy it?
That's even funnier.
Well, it's a beautiful bed, but it's a full, you know, no one wants to buy it.
Part of me thinks that also it's all just perspective. Like, you are holding on to it, and maybe that second bedroom, once it stops being a catch-all, can be a guest bedroom.
Right.
Like,
maybe.
Who knows?
Or the next place. But yes, exactly. Who knows? We have the room to store it. That's fine. But
yeah, those are big choices when you're moving in. Like, do you get rid of whose mixing bowls do you get rid of? Like, you kind of like just sort out the nicer thing. Like, I don't. Mm-hmm. That stuff is tricky. I've only done it once. Dave, like yours, mine was incredibly short lived.
How short was yours?
I think like 6 months.
5 months?
Yeah. Mine was 3.5.
Woo woo!
Oh, it's such a big change.
That's a quickie.
Yeah, it's such a big change to then have it be that short, which that means that you almost got used to it, but you never quite did. It's real bad.
Yeah,
it's hard.
We painted
too. It's hard to not feel like a you what?
Oh no!
Yeah, we painted. We bought paint. I mean, it was honestly, it was like looking kind of cute. There were a bunch of plants. Although I do remember, and in hindsight, my ex was correct. But I got these. This was like. What was it? It was 2013. So there was a bunch of just kind of like gimmicky, like Instagram wasn't brand new, but it was new enough. And so they had this, there was this service where it was like, take your best Instagrams and like make it into art. And I had these, you know, whatever. I'm a sucker for, you know, whatever, a sunset or like a nice beach day. And so I had a couple of like really nice, in my opinion, for a Instagram grid, nice pictures. And I had them like put on these canvases and I had them delivered and they were hanging in my place, and then my ex moved in and was like, I want to take these down, these are really ugly. Oh. And I was like,
it's hard.
Okay, you're right,
that's hard. So that was a big conversation for us because we both have a lot of art, and in many ways our art is in line, like the stuff that I think that we care the most about we're pretty in tune with, but there's a lot of stuff that we're both like mm-mm. So we gave ourselves permission to, with all respect, veto.
Okay.
Oh, veto power.
Veto things for, and then like if you really want something, then let's have that conversation and then we make sacrifices or, you know, whatever. But then after this started, the pandemic, and there's a lot, and I should say, I'm very busy with work. I've got two podcasts that are doing three shows a week, plus a YouTube show that we figured out how to shoot remotely for my YouTube channel.
And you're producing all of these?
Producing and writing them and doing them. So, and it's a lot of news, which keeps me in a very stressful mindset a lot.
Oof, yeah.
And that's a whole other thing. But out of the gate, I think he had this idea of what this time would be, right? Of, well, we're going to be together. We're going to get through it together. And maybe we'll have fun. It'll be a little bit like a vacation. And then you start to realize just how long it's going to be, blah, blah, blah. But he, especially out of the gate, didn't have much to do, right? Like before people started saying, okay, yes, do your recordings at home and all of this stuff. And so we decided to have him do this project, which is clean out the garage and use my old couch and his old TV and make it like a separate hangout space, which is where I'm recording right now. And we took all of the art. So your sunset pictures would have come down here, maybe all of the stuff from each other that didn't make the cut for upstairs. And he hung it all over the garage. Mm. So it's like this other nice space with artwork that friends had made that didn't quite fit up there, or weird presents that our parents have given us, you know, stuff that we've outgrown. One big piece that I love, but an ex-boyfriend gave me. So it's down here, you know, but it felt like a really nice way to say like, yeah, let's pick the best things for up there, and but still make room for all the other little treasures we have.
That's really, I mean, it seems like, and obviously a lot of the tenets of a successful relationship are compromise, communication, everything, all of the good stuff you read in books by people who are richer than us, but maybe are even actually single because they just make their whole lives about writing self-help books. However, I think it's it's interesting to have to pair good old-fashioned actual relationship skills with sort of time of crisis, what the hell are we going to do skills, and marrying the two until what you have is not just, oh, we got a good foundation for whatever we're doing, but, oh, now we know how to deal with quote unquote, quote unquote anything, whether it's like, you had to move out under, you know, whatever, say a coyote chewed through your plumbing line and you had to move in the middle of the night. I feel like if you can get through this time as a relatively new couple, having set up everything and having made compromises already, it seems like you're in an extremely good position.
I agree. I feel very, again, for how hard this is, and it's not to say that there won't be other hard times in our lives, but I think that this will be as hard as anything. You know, we've got all of our parents are alive. There's going to be deaths. There's going to be hardships. There's going to be job losses. There's going to be times of, but I think that I truly feel like we've seen the worst of each other, you know, and I'm like, it's not that bad.
I love that.
Oh, that's good.
I also have, it just popped into my head, I'm not sure if this is something that your listeners would want, but to hear a couple of the things that we've been doing in quarantine that's been nice as a couple or single with roommates. So one thing that we're doing that I love, and again, it's Earth Day, so I'm going to promote this one, is we bought trash picker-upper thingy, the thing that you can grab stuff off the ground, and the little dustpan and broom thing. Mm-hmm. So when we go on our walks, we try to clean up stuff on the side of the road.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, that's so very nice.
It feels like such a good use of time when you're like a little bit caged up feeling, and it's something like tangible that you can do.
Yeah.
We started doing some karaoke. We don't have a karaoke machine, but we just put the lyrics up on YouTube on the TV.
Oh.
And we'll have some drinks and we'll do that. Lots of like, when we sit down to have dinner together, candles and music and maybe some dancing.
Oh.
Just really, you know, nice things that you can do to change up the pace. We haven't done this, but we're going to soon now that it's not so rainy, is, you know, just to put together a picnic and find a nice spot to set up and have a view. Or do it at nighttime and, you know, sit on the roof of the car or the hood of the car or something like that, you know.
Look at the stars now that there's not smog, so you can actually see what's up there in the sky.
Exactly.
There's finally stars again. Those are beautiful ideas, and that make your home life just a little more interesting.
Well, just something to look forward to, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or like doing a takeout night where you say like, oh, we're going to get a nice takeout meal from someplace and like plate it. And we dress up for each other, you know?
Yeah.
I like
a little bit.
I like all of this.
Me too.
Well, okay.
And Zoom double dates.
Oh, have you been doing that?
Yeah, Zoom double dates are a good one.
Do you have regular couples, or are you cycling through a bunch?
Yeah, we have to get some more on the books, but we've done it a couple times with a couple of different people.
That sounds wonderful. Well, as far as those are fairly upscale. And I do genuinely like them, as far as, and I might borrow a few of those if you don't mind. As we start to wrap up, I have been asking all of our guests, single, coupled, cohabitating, or otherwise, if they have any streaming recommendations for us. So if there's anything in addition to, you know, cleaning up the street and everything, and dressing up for each other, if you're ever just feeling like you're in your sweats on the couch Are you guys burning through anything or getting involved with any new series?
Yeah, that's interesting. We do not watch as much TV as I would expect. Not as much as I watch by myself, anyway. We are watching Homeland. I've already seen it, but I hadn't seen it in a long time, so I got him into it. It's a little stressful, though.
Yeah.
but it's such good acting. We are rewatching Great British Baking Show, specifically Raoul's season, because it's so sweet. Season six. I mean, honestly, that's a killer season. I just started Unorthodox, which is incredible.
Oh, on Netflix. Really? Yeah.
Okay, really, that's a new one that we haven't had recommended yet.
I love it. I've only seen one episode, but I loved it. So I'm like itching to watch more of that. It's interesting. That's a thing. So I work a lot during the day, or I thankfully I still have an office space as well. We're getting evicted from it, so but I think because it's a whole story, I sublease from another company that's now out of business because of all of this, so I'm trying to figure out how I can stay there. Might not work out, but I've been able to go there sometimes to do my recordings on busy days, and so he'll have a lot of time during the day for himself, and so he might watch a lot of the stuff that he likes to watch and then is tired of watching TV by the evening. And so we don't watch that much together, but we'll watch like an episode or something. But I need to find for myself, I think, carving out time where I just sit on the couch by myself and watch whatever I want to watch, non-negotiable.
Yeah.
Because we need that.
Yeah, you need alone time.
You get to have the stuff that you share, but you also get to have the stuff that's for you.
Yeah. Maybe a couple times a week you switch off. You say, let's trade in our Homeland and our couple baths. You take a solo bath. I'll watch an episode of it by myself. Yeah.
That's a good idea.
But, Katie, this all sounds wonderful, and I'm really happy that you were able to walk us kind of through this, and our listeners, because I think it is such a quote unquote weird time to be doing something like this, but it also seems like if you have the right combination of people, it can be, you know, perfect is the wrong word,
possible.
But it's possible and it's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Where can people find you in these multiple podcasts and YouTube shows?
Oh yeah. I'll plug my stuff. So I have two, podcasts. One is called Worst Year Ever. That is with iHeartRadio. You can find it on any of those apps. That was originally supposed to be all about the election, and now it's about so much more than that. We do one or two episodes a week. We've been doing a lot of interviews with people who are organizing, or you know, we had an interview with a doctor who gave us a lot of interesting information, a lot of direct action ways that you can take control in these crazy times for yourself. So we do that, and then other deep dives into topics. And then the other show, my other podcast, is called Even More News. And that is a news podcast with my co-host Cody Johnston. And we always bring in different interesting guests. And then Cody and I have a YouTube show called Some More News. And so just about every week we have a new video up on our YouTube channel that you can check out.
Those are great. I've been watching those. I watched the Pete Buttigieg one, and it was really, really was wonderful in helping me put my finger on why I don't like that guy. It was wonderful. But listeners, please, check out all of that stuff. Especially, I mean, the news angle for me, as far as staying informed, I can be a slacker about it. I can read too much Twitter, but the stuff Katie and Cody have been doing have been extremely helpful to me. I want to thank you so much for being our guest today. This was a fantastic chat. Thank you so much,
Katie. Thank you, Katie. We love you very much.
It's so nice to hear you guys, and I wish I could hug you.
Eventually, soon enough.
Eventually.
Save one. Right. Save a hug for us.
Have a great day, you guys.
Talk to you soon.
I'll save all of them.
Okay. Bye.
Bye, Katie. Hey, Dave. Should we Stevie. Take a deep breath together right now?
Stevie. I mean, well, first of all, listeners, we are not having this reaction to that lovely episode with a lovely former and current guest, Katie Stoll. We we very nearly, almost completely lost all of Katie's audio for this episode.
So you would have just either A, had a 20-minute episode of Dave and I giving you meaningless updates, or B, had just tracks of me and Dave, and you could fill in the blank of what Katie said.
Yeah, just long pauses for a guest that you have not heard yet and will never hear in this recording.
Dave, that was so stressful. I'm so glad we got it back.
Oh my God. And a live update as it's happening. I just got the file from Katie.
Okay, okay.
She was able to rescue and recover her track and send it to me.
Wow.
Oh my goodness. That was a rough stuff.
Was stressful. Wow. I am so glad. For anyone, I think everyone can relate to what it would feel like to lose an entire project, essentially. But like, man, that is like, with the amount of coordinating podcast take and with the amount of coordinating it takes, kind of like telling someone how to use new programs and stuff like that. It is a miracle, first of all, that we've had episodes successfully record. And I am so grateful it was saved.
Yeah, especially, for every reason, but also it was just a very nice conversation with somebody who is seems like they're having a great time in this time, you know, not without its struggles or difficulties, but I feel very, I don't know, I'm very grateful to know someone like Katie, how anonymous her boyfriend wants to be, but I know him too, and I'm happy that it's working out for them.
Yeah, me too. It's incredible. It's incredible that it's working out for them. It's also like, I think this episode will be really helpful for anyone, like moving in with their partner currently, or having kind of like a quarantine situation where they're moving in, to know that like the talks about food, the discussions about that stuff, totally normal. This is a totally weird time, and I think all relationships look a little bit different than we're used to right now, and that's okay, you know.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's I think maybe it will be helpful because, you know, yeah, I still get to see my girlfriend in the most careful way we can, but you know, I'm not sure what our lives would look like if we had to hunker down together, either at my place or hers. It's just not, as much as I would love for it to be a perfect situation, we just don't have the space to accommodate each other all the time forever right now.
Yeah.
And it seems like these two, Katie and her boyfriend, have a very, very nice setup that is accommodating to both of them. And I'm frankly extremely thrilled for them. I think it's
me too. They're both such cool people. Dave, I do have one personal update for you. And it's revelatory. Okay. You know, after years and years of doing this podcast, I have almost no success stories in terms of cooking. Like, I have baking success stories, which we already knew that I was good at. But like,
yes, cooking, you're an excellent baker.
Cooking wise, Dave, zero wins.
Uh-huh.
At 34 years old, I learned that the key to cooking is following a recipe. I'm humiliated to announce I bought all of the ingredients in a recipe for baked gluten-free orange chicken, including like everything from scratch. I followed the exact recipe and got the exact ingredients. And let me tell you something. Success. Can you tell me why it's taken me that long to figure it out that if you follow a recipe, it works? Why is that news to me?
Well, at the risk of sounding diplomatic, I will say that you are an improviser at heart and sometimes by trade. You're quick on your feet. You have a fast wit, and I think possibly you thought maybe I could improve on a recipe. Maybe food is like jazz. Maybe food is like the improv form, The Herald. And all I need is just a few suggestions of ingredients to get me started. And I can just go from there.
Yes, Dave, that is what I thought. And let me tell you something. Ineffective at best usually resulted in me having a terrible meal. And how wonderful to know that if I just follow a recipe, I will have a meal worth eating. That's it. Also, why have none of our guests...
I'm so glad that you could come to this conclusion.
Me too. But my question is, why have none of our guests just said, hey, follow a recipe?
I think maybe they're assuming you are following a recipe. But I mean, you know, when we had Rachel on and she was saying that you burned the vegetables to make a stock, maybe she neglected to say that you didn't use enough water because she just assumed you did, or that, you know, you measured it wrong. But it seems like you just eyeballed it if you're not using a recipe.
That's exactly right. That's all. I've been eyeballing cooking my entire career, and I will no longer do that. With baking, I follow a recipe, and I'll do the same with cooking from now on.
Wait, you do it with baking, but not with cooking. Why do you think that is?
I just, I don't know. I get overwhelmed because there are so many recipes and so many cookbooks and stuff, and it feels a little like burdensome to me. But with my baking stuff, I just print out my grandma's old recipes. So I have like five, you know, like, I don't know. There's something about like, there's too much to sift through. There was a block there for too long. That's all I'll say. I also grew up in a house where nobody cooked. So it's not normal for me to like understand that people follow recipes, because frankly, most people, when I've seen them cooking in the kitchen, are not.
Yeah, it sounds like it was a goddamn free-for-all for you before this.
Yeah, I mean, it really was.
Well, I think that's an extremely good lesson. It might seem like second nature, but it's just not. I mean, I almost never baked at all. And a couple of months ago, I was bragging up and down that I made a banana bread with almond flour, and I put Oreos and Heath bar chips in it. And it was kind of good, but honestly, it had a lot of butter and sugar in it. And of course, it was good. I made a straight up banana bread following a recipe to the letter 2 weeks ago. And let me tell you, that one was better, of course.
Yeah, always, right? Like, wow, but what a lesson. I'm glad we both have learned this lesson. You probably already knew it, but low-key learned this lesson while being stuck in our homes.
I know. Follow that recipe. Stevie, I got to ask you a question as a TV viewer, because I know in the past you've maybe watched more reality style television than me, which doesn't seem like it's much, but just more than me. Have you seen the Netflix series Too Hot to Handle?
Have I ever? It's...
Oh, you have?
Oh, yes. Have you?
I watched it.
What are your thoughts?
My thoughts are I could not look away, even though I wanted to. I guess a big thing is that I have such vastly different takes on what attractive people look like than what a TV executive thinks attractive people look like. I'm constantly shocked by seeing a show where the premise is the sexiest people you've ever seen compete to blah, blah, blah. And then you see them and you're like, I don't understand how they got these false eyelashes on. It's 105 degrees where they are. I don't understand how they're not falling off. I don't understand how long this man had to lift weights and do push-ups to look like this, but I'm not sure I'm into it. Although aesthetically, I guess these angles that they've been created on his body are nice, but Too Hot to Handle is one of the wildest shows I've ever seen, in that nothing happens at all the entire time. And yet I was completely fascinated.
I felt the same way. I kept looking at the people, and I know what that TV was telling me. These people are attractive. And I was like, why am I not attracted to any of them? And also, what kind of dysfunction does it take for someone to be told, hey, you can't have sex for 4 weeks? And they're having like meltdowns the size of a meltdown I would have if someone was like, hey, your whole family died.
I mean, the premise of the show, listeners, if you haven't seen it, is that we got a bunch of sexy singles together on an island, which looks like 1/15th of a resort. It's like it's a couple of bungalows and like a little beach property. There's some water that no one ever seems to go into except for once.
They all and sleep a little in the patio same room. Area. Yeah.
It is the most budget show I've ever seen. You really see the money if you've ever seen an episode of The Bachelor. They're going on these dates. There's travel. They're meeting the parents.
There's this helicopters. Show looks like it was made.
Oh, yeah. This show looks like it was made for, I don't know, the budget of a season of some competition. Two episodes of Survivor from the first season.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great comparison. Yeah, it's a low budge. It's a low budge thing. And it is, frankly, one of the cringiest TV shows that I can't stop watching.
It was shocking to me, my ability to keep watching it, despite I did not feel like I was being entertained, but I felt like something was happening. There was some kind of response happening in my brain. Yeah. And it it's such a wild. And obviously, it's not that hard to not have sex for a couple of weeks, especially if there's money on the line. But the whole time I was like, the grand prize is $100,000. And if nobody has sex, they all split it. But there's like 12 people here. And so the whole time when the money is being deducted, where it's like, oh, these people kissed, so you have to deduct $3,000. I was like, they're going to be walking away with like $6,100 each before taxes.
Yep.
It makes no sense.
It's not enough money.
It is not enough money.
I don't. This show is bizarre.
I just cannot get over the aesthetic of like we sent a PA over to CB2 or Restoration Hardware or IKEA, honestly, and was like build something that looks like a tropical paradise outside patio furniture. There's I think two. There's no real challenges the entire time.
Nope.
It's astonishing. I didn't watch Love is Blind or Love Island or The Circle or anything. And this is the first one where I was like, I think I can get down with this. And I'm shocked that I lasted as long as I did. I watched it and my jaw hit the floor.
100%. Same. I'm with you.
Would you recommend this to our audience?
Only in a pinch. Only if you're like desperate for... Only if you need a numb out, like if you ran out of weed and alcohol and you really, need a numb out.
Okay, let's say you're at the end of your rope. Maybe there's something happening, like there's a global pandemic going on. You can't really leave your house. You've already made your like sanctioned once a week grocery run or once every 2 weeks grocery run. And there's nothing on TV and you're out of booze and no more weed. I would say throw that on, try to lull yourself to sleep. And then if that doesn't work, just watch an actual good movie.
That's great advice. I love that.
So this is our streaming recommendation with an asterisk, meaning if you have any other thing you could possibly do, do that.
Yeah, do that. If you have a mom to call a mom. Do anything else.
If you want to see some actual attractive people, I just watched a very crazy movie, 1980s American Gigolo, starring Richard Gere and Lauren Hutton. Mm-hmm. And it's Paul Schrader, who wrote Taxi Driver and directed Blue Collar and First Reformed and a bunch of other great movies. I'd never seen American Gigolo before. It's a pretty uneven, weird movie, but my goodness, if you ever want to see two people who were at the absolute prime of their physical existence, Richard Gere and Lauren Hutton are two of the most attractive people I think I've ever seen in my entire life.
I haven't seen this, but I will do the research to confirm or deny.
At least take yourself on a little Google image search journey of what these people looked like when they made this movie.
Okay. I will do that.
In fact, you know what? Just right before we wrap up, I'm just going to show you. I'm going to text you just like we showed you.
Yeah, do you mind?
Chris Fairbanks' hands. Let's see. Richard Gere, American Gigolo. Oops, I accidentally searched for Richard Gere Amazon Prime. Can't read. this is how you learn. I cannot read.
That's how you learn that we actually don't know words. I will say also that Katie referenced Earth Day a lot. And so if you're listening to this, Earth Day was probably exactly a week ago. Doesn't mean you can't re-celebrate. Go ahead. Celebrate again.
redo it.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That's okay. A good call.
I'm waiting
here. Okay, I'm trying to get the best images, but let me just here again. I'm gonna get a real steamy one and just like a real. Here we go. Coming your way now. There's our boy Richie, and here's Richard Gere and Lauren Hutton together.
Oh my God! I'm finally attracted to a man.
This is the thing. Beautiful. If 1980 Richard Gere was in. I was on Too Hot to Handle the show.
I would
understand the temptation of I'm going to risk all this money.
Me too.
To maybe have a chance with Richard Gere because I just can't understand.
What a beautiful physique. Wow. I'm not normally in. Wow. I'd lose all my money for that man. Yes.
Ugh. I'm so glad. Okay. Well, yes, please feel free to quote unquote celebrate Earth Day any way you want on any day because we're obviously killing the planet and that doesn't feel good. But watch American Gigolo if you want a weird time. Check out Too Hot to Handle if you want to hate weirder yourself but time. Also be compelled for 8 hours. And email us, iburneverythingpod@gmail.com. Call us, 213-458-5236. Rate, review, and subscribe on all the places, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify. Go outside when you're allowed to with your mask on and shout the name of our show from the top of a mountain that's not closed for business. Keep listening to us and we'll keep making a show for you. Hang in there. Let us know how your core is going because our core is going as good as, I guess, possible in a time like this. Yeah. Steve, kiss your dogs for me.
I will, Dave. They miss you, especially Holiday.
Oh my God. I can't believe I have just ducked out of my girlfriend for 2 months. She must think I'm a lowlife.
Well, she's pretty angry. Expect retaliation when you come back around.
Yeah, I'm sure she's gonna bite my shoes and I'm gonna be ready for it.
We'll get a video so people can see it.
All right. I miss you, bud. I'll talk to you soon.
Miss you too. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Thompson.
And I'm Mark David Christensen, and together we host Ah Crap, a Hellboy podcast.
The show dedicated to the half-demon hero brought forth by writer-artist Mike Mignola and published by Dark Horse Comics.
Each week, we discuss everything Hellboy.
Plus his expanded universe with the BPRD, Abe Sapien, Lobster Johnson, and many more.
That's Ah Crap, a Hellboy podcast on Campfire Media or wherever you get your podcasts.
Campfire.